When I moved here in 1980, Bozeman seemed a much safer place than Oakland, California, where I had lived for 20 years. Now, as I read the paper and the news, it seems less safe. So I've asked our next speaker to give us information about the actual incidence of crime and violence in Bozeman. Our second speaker is Bozeman Chief of Police Ron Price. Ron has been a police officer for 36 years and came to Bozeman in 2010. He holds a bachelor's degree from Central Washington University with a focus on social sciences. He's a graduate of the FBI National Academy, Northwest Command College, and the Senior Management Institute of Policing. Additionally, Ron is committed to helping provide services and education to impact domestic violence issues, and he serves on the board of directors of Haven.
I hope to give you an understanding of a couple of things. One is the statistics that are around crime in both locally and nationally. And there's going to be a little, I'm going to touch on general, you know, what we think of as general crime, but I'm also going to talk about violent crime and violent incidents as they relate to the nation and local. I promise you that the first slide I show you will be the worst one. And it has to do with basically the crime in the overall index crime rate. So what's the index crime? The index crime's a way that the state of Montana and many other places across the nation, they categorize a group of crimes so that you can consistently monitor them over the course of the years and that you can compare yourself against others using that same set of crimes, of reported crimes. And as you can see, the index crimes are homicide, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, which was explained earlier by the senator, and burglary, larceny, which is theft, and theft of a motor vehicle. Those are the index crimes that we use to measure each other and to measure our successes within a community. As you can see, in 2005, when you take a rate is the raw number of incidences divided against your population. And you can see that we were running at about 56 offenses for per 1,000 people of our population. And then you can see it continued to go down until about 2010, and it's climbed just a little bit. And there's a twofold reason for that. One is the change of our population because the 2010 census came aboard, and then the others were projections. And then the other is an actual increase of raw numbers. So I think you can see there's a pretty significant change over the course of the years. A lot of this change was driven by crimes against property, things like thefts and those kinds of things. A lot of the changes don't come in the crimes of violence. Oftentimes, those are more impacted, they're less impacted, frankly, by the presence of the police than they are by societal factors. The possible exception to that would be robbery, which is some places classify it as a crime against property, some as a crime against person, but that's one that can be affected pretty well by policing. The other thing that changed significantly that, frankly, I'm proud of, if you look in the rape column in 2012, you'll see a significant increase in the last two or three years in the rape column in 2012. And I know that that sounds strange to you for me to stand up here and say that I'm proud of that number. But I am because of our involvement with victims and our involvement with people and trying to get out the word that they will not be re-victimized by a member of this police department during the investigation. And so I think that both the police department, the service providers like Voice and some of the others, the Help Center, I think that we have really done a great job of getting that message out. And so there are some increases in those tables that I'm pretty proud of. That's one of them. This is another. This is the list of what I refer to as our comparables. It's the seven areas that have populations of 20,000 or thereabouts. I throw Kalispell in there. They're almost 20,000. And so what this does is comparing against those cities and in 2012 what our crime rates were. And that's including Butte. And really, that's real. Butte is often an outlier because Butte is a combination of a county and a city, and county numbers are statistically quite a bit lower in crime rates than cities. And it has less to do with, it's not necessarily because they're more or less violent or anything like that. What it is the population centers and the retail centers are located in the cities. So when people come toward this, it definitely adds to a lot of the numbers, especially in all of these, you just don't have a robbery out in the middle of Powell County somewhere. You have a robbery at a retail establishment in an urban area. If you look here, in the last 9 years, we've had 3 homicides reported, actually, with the one that occurred in September. We've now had 4 homicides in 9 years, as opposed to Billings, that had 4 homicides in 2012. And I'll talk a little bit about that as we go further in. Nationally, firearms-related homicides. Okay. I'm kind of a rules guy, so I'll be out of here in 15 minutes. Firearms-related homicides, are at their lowest rate since 1981, and that is per 100,000, and that is when the Center for Disease Control began keeping those statistics. They peaked. In 1981, they were 6.6 firearms-related homicides per 100,000 population in the nation. They peaked in 1993 at 7, and they're currently at 3.6 in 2010. They're the lowest that they have ever been. That is kind of often lost in the shuffle, and I think it was worth stating. It can be interpreted many, many ways, but it's worth stating. So what does Bozeman look like with violent crime? You saw what we were like with all index crimes put together. So violent crime, I went into the Montana Board of Crime Control, which is the keeper of the statistics, among many other things, and they have a wonderful interactive website where you can build your own reports, and it's open to the public. Anybody can go in there, and you can query it in many, many different ways. Montana Board of Crime Control, very user-friendly for most people. I had to call one of the analysts, and he walked me through for about 40 minutes on which things to click. But I took every crime against person, which includes misdemeanor assaults, somebody that punches someone else out at a bar, all the way to homicides. And then I also added robbery, which in this state is categorized as a crime against property. However, when you go somewhere with the threatened use of force or display a handgun or display a weapon of another type and you demand money, to me, that's a violation of against a human being. And so these are the rates that came up per 1,000. The number of incidents. Bozeman had 9 incidents per 1,000 population. This is in 2012. Compared to Helena at 17. And probably ironically enough, Helena is probably our closest comparable. Maybe Missoula, but they're significantly larger than us in population. But I'm very pleased with how we stack. And I believe that says a lot about our community. You know, almost all crimes of violence, with the exception of the robberies, but almost all crimes of violence are non-anonymous crimes. Almost, not without fail, there are those exceptions, but the vast, vast majority involve a bad guy who is known to the victim. And so those are some things that are, you know, worth remembering. The discussion of the stranger contact, I mean, it happens, but it happens. It is so, so rare. This is just merely a chart that shows the actual raw numbers of the offenses that are reported per year. And you can see we've been pretty static. And I talked earlier about a little bit of an incline in 2012. These are the actual raw numbers as opposed to a rate gone against the population numbers. And this bright yellow one is Bozeman. This, to me, is the most disturbing slide that I've put together. This is a discussion about kids from age 0 to 19, deaths involving firearms. And whatever the raw numbers are, you can throw them out. I mean, every one of those raw numbers is a little human being of some sort. And this is what it looks like in the United States. Two-thirds, or 66%, are homicides. In the state of Montana, 68% of our deaths of these kids is a suicide.
With guns.
This is specifically death by guns.
Mm.
Yeah. Something's broke. Something is seriously broken. This accident section, I would be very cautious about making anything out of it because the accident section depends so greatly on states on how it's reported. Many states, if a six-year-old picks up and is handling a gun and accidentally shoots their three-year-old little brother, that would be classified as a homicide because it's one human being shooting another human being. In other states, it would be classified as an accident, which I believe everybody in this room would recognize what it is. Or at least unintentional.
Before you take that off,
yes.
There's another way to interpret that. If you,
I have another slide about interpretation of stats.
If your homicide rate turns out to be very low, mm-hmm. but people commit suicide just because depression has an average thing throughout the society, it can produce a graph like that.
That when it's factored by population, Montana ranks number 36 of 50 in the states of homicide rates of this age group by guns. They rank number 2 in the nation per capita homicide rates suicide rates by guns on this population.
Okay, so that's tough.
Yeah. When you focus this on all ages and give it just specifically a local perspective, take away the 0 to 19 and give this a purely City of Bozeman local perspective, in the last 5 years, there have been 3 homicides, all of which involved a firearm. In the last 5 years, there have been 47 suicides that involved a firearm. Okay? In our community, and this is a blanket statement, and it's going to come out like it is, a blanket statement. Our problem isn't folks killing other people. Our problem is alcohol and mental health and hopelessness and a failure to recognize those things for what they are. And these kids making a decision that is life-ending for a temporary, what we at our ages recognize as a temporary setback. And so, anyway, I'll get down off my soapbox on that one. This is just a national statement. It's another example of how regionally things can be so different. This is, I apologize for the age and the fuzziness, this is the only one I could find that basically breaks down homicides, criminal homicides, by the type of weapon that's involved. The vast, vast majority of them are handguns. The city of Bozeman hasn't had a handgun-based homicide as long as any member of my police department, the most senior of which is 22 years, can remember. Everyone that they can remember was either a shotgun or a hunting rifle. Our last three, two were shotguns. One was a 1940s era kind of a rifle. And it's another example where regionally things can really change. The same could not be said for Southern Florida. As an example, I have never, I take that back, I have been peripheral, in my 36 years, I have been peripherally involved with one case that involved a shooting with what would be classified as an assault rifle in my career. If you talk to somebody from Southern Florida, they would be telling you an entirely different story. Yes, sir.
What about the types of weapons used by children?
It depends on the age of the child. The vast majority of them are handguns, especially if the child is 7 years or younger. And a lot of that is basically size and what they stumble across. You know? It changes as the demographics grow and you have an adult or a reasonably adult-sized human, a 16, 17, 18-year-old. So I wanted to talk about this age-old debate of gun policy discussion. And first I'll tell you that you can ask me all you want. I'm not going to tell you what ought to happen. Because you know what? My job is, number one, Carson's in the legislative branch. I'm not. I'm in the executive branch. It's not my job to set policy. And even if I spoke as Ron Price, human being who, lives out there on the edge in the north of town, even if I spoke that way, it would be interpreted as representing the city of Bozeman and the police department or the law enforcement profession. And you know what? This is how I view my role as the chief. I view my role as one that brings people together to reach a level of consensus to solve a local problem and a local issue. And for me to weigh in heavily in a gun debate policy, or a gun policy debate, it's polarizing. And it would completely destroy my ability to build, in my view, my ability to build cohesiveness to a group of people. So, this Plato, monarchy with a few liberties is the best form of government, and the disarming of the populace is essential to the maintenance of an orderly and autocratic system. 300 to 400 BC. He had a very famous student, his number one student, Aristotle. Ownership of weapons is necessary for the true citizenship and participation in the political system. This is not a new debate, folks. This is not a new debate. The weapons have changed. The ideas have not. And somebody asked about interpretation of statistics. And, that is one of the most frustrating things that I find. That you can't, like it says down here, no single number will tell the story. And boy, is that ever the truth in my experience. And you can read for yourself what Dan Baum has to say. It was a book that you recommended, and I found it pretty enjoyable so far and insightful. And I think he's spot on. Let me give you an example of this. There's a professor named Kleck, and he's with Florida. University of Florida, Florida State, I can't remember. He's a criminology professor, and he's a research professor, and he does lots of work, and that's what he does. And he did a survey-based research and came up with a number of legal defensible uses of a firearm in any given year. and that number was 2.5 million. During the same time frame, during the same two-year time frame, a guy named Hemingway, he's a professor out of Harvard. He's a research professor. He did a survey-based research, the same as Clark. And they asked a few series of questions, and he extrapolated it out nationwide, and he came up with 80,000 uses, legally defensible uses of a firearm in any given year. 2.5 million, 80,000. Doing the same research methodologies, and with the same, I mean, these are both very learned, talented researchers. And that's what they come up with. And I would argue that it probably is that what they came up with, because that's the direction that their eyes were painted or pointed in the first place. As you might imagine, Professor Kleck's 2.5 million is now routinely touted everywhere by the NRA. As you might imagine, Professor Hemingway's are touted by things like the Brady Center for Gun Control. People glom onto the statistics that feed them. I've done my best here to give you what I think are a balanced discussion on it and a balanced view on it from both a national and a local perspective. Where I wanted to point to is, you know what? There is very clear, arguably it's debated on what it means, but there's very clear language about the right to bear arms.
The library is now closed.
You have a right to bear arms. I would argue that if you choose to exercise that right, you have a moral responsibility of gun ownership. This statistic, I'm sure, is much larger now. Because at the time of this was taken in 2002. And there's been, as we all know, there's been an elevated number of gun ownership. 34% of the U.S. children live in a home with a firearm. When they did that survey of the homes that said that they had children and a firearm, 30% said that the firearm was unlocked and loaded. This is the five-year-old that shoots his three-year-old little sister. And there are not classes of people that are immune from this. I see it all the time. I see police officers all the time in the national news. There was one less than 2 months ago where the four-year-old son picked up his father's duty weapon. He had taken it out as he went around to pick something up as he was getting ready for work, picked it up and shot his mother and killed her. There is not a group of people that are immune from that. And if anything, police officers are worse. And I would say that it's because of this. It's because I'm not a gun guy. I mean, you would not know it by looking in my gun safe. I have lots of them, okay? And it's just, they've just kind of grown there over the years. But I'm not a gun guy. And people would walk up to me and they'd go, hey, that's really cool. What's that gun you're wearing? And I'd say, I don't know, it's the one they gave me. And you start to look at it, not unlike what a carpenter looks at, a 32-ounce framing hammer. It's just this big old thing that hangs on your side. It's part of your job, and you use it when you need to use it. And, Patrick, you throwing us out?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. So we have a tendency to sometimes get too comfortable with things that maybe we shouldn't get too comfortable with. So one of the things that I did when I came here is I went out and I bought 70 gun safes. I felt that it was unconscionable for me as a chief of police to hire some 24-year-old who probably has a new husband or wife at home and maybe starting a family and say, here's all your equipment and here's your gun and we'll train you on it. Take it all home. That's not going to happen. And so consequently, Lisa, would you let the senator back in? We locked him out. For those that don't know, that's my wife, Lisa. Lisa is a retired lieutenant with the Kent Police Department and did 24 years of service there. Anyway, She's the person that helps me a lot. So, so those are the things that I personally can do, and I challenge all of us to try to spread that to others so that they can do that. In the city of Bozeman, as an example, the way you can spread it, there were over 20 firearms stolen last year in the city of Bozeman, either from cars or buildings. Of those, 70% had no signs of force. Okay, a lot of them just said, sorry, my car was unlocked. And they took a firearm out of it. Okay, some of them said, I think it was locked, but it's unlocked now, and there's no glass on the ground, It's that kind of a deal. And it could have been. It could have been it was locked and all that. But 70% of them, over 70%, there were no signs of force necessary to take that person's firearm. And none of them, 0%, 0%, had a trigger lock or were insane. Okay. And those are the firearms that will probably, if there's going to be the ones that fall and do no good, those are the kinds that will. My thoughts is we need to do a better job of education. We need to, speaking of education and your thoughts, back where the 34% had guns in their house, and 30% of those were locked or unlocked and were loaded with ammunition. 72%, up mid 70%, people say that their children will not touch a firearm without a parent present, an adult present, and they will come and they will tell them that they found a firearm. So this guy did this study. And he brought in these kids, and they ranged from, I think, 5 to 8. And they brought them in, and they bring them in, and they said, we're going to talk about this, and, I'm sorry, I've got to run out, don't mess around, just sit here for a sec, I'll be back in about 10 minutes. Well, that lasts for about 4 seconds, and then it's around, and inside the gun, or inside the desk drawer is a .380 pistol that had been made inoperable. Over 60% of the kids picked it up and played with it when they found it. One of the kids, I can't remember how big the survey was, or the study was, one kid left it where it was and told an adult, and he got teased. Yeah. And 30%, between 20 and 30% pulled the trigger on it. Yeah, yeah.
And this is when 70% of our folks think that these kids won't touch them.
I mean, they're kids. So, education. To talk about those kinds of things, those responsible gun ownership things. Mental health services. Alcohol. If you were to ask me what our biggest problem is, it's not going to be
guns. It won't be mental health, but it's going to be a close. It's going to be alcohol and other substances. When I asked my 20-plus year veteran, of all of these homicides, did any of them not have alcohol in play? And he goes, yeah, one of them. He was a dry alcoholic. He had been dry for 6 or 7 years. That was the only one over his 20-plus year career that did not have alcohol involved.
And the same can be said for our suicides. Almost all of them are alcohol or substance-based. So, talks about the root of evil, kind of an individual little family tree here. And this isn't all about something. To me, this sums up my philosophy. Exposure to violence, disillusion of the family, this unearned fame, where they become instant heroes or celebrities, this desensitization and mental illness, and all of this stuff feeds what is truly a societal issue that has complex fixes. So my final thoughts. This quote from a very famous man here, Ron Price. I truly believe this. It's a wonderful community of caring people. And that is why, these crime rates that I showed earlier where Bozeman is at 9 and everybody else is between 12 and 17, it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the type of community that we have and the people that we have in it and the relationships that we build. And so this is where I chose to take this talk, was down the path that where we're at now. I think it's a multifaceted problem that will only be solved or addressed by multifaceted actions. And so that's the direction I chose to take this thing. I know there are other people that would just as soon I choose to take it another direction. And so now it's your opportunity to ask me camp questions that will take it another direction. So, sir.
Chief, do you think it would be helpful tonight if we were to have a speaker that actually supports gun control and measures of additional background checks for purchase of guns? The status quo is very well represented.
Yeah, no, I believe that. Yeah, and you know what? That status quo might very well be represented here, too.
There's been an increase, market increase, in the number of people applying for licenses to carry concealed weapons here in Bozeman. Do you see that as a deterrent to violence or a problem that might exacerbate violence?
I don't necessarily know whether there's a key to, if there's a nexus between the concealed weapons permit and violence. And I'll tell you why. Is because, frankly, those are the only people that are receiving any level of training, is the folks that get a concealed weapons permit. That's the only place that mandates training. You can go down to Bob's gun shop without that and do your background check and get your whatever type of weapon you choose to get. And there's no level of training requirement. I can also say that in my career, I have never been involved in a where I have arrested or investigated someone as a suspect of a crime of violence that was a possessor of a concealed weapons permit. Whether that may also have no nexus to your question, but it's an anecdotal fact.
So what has to be in a background check to deny you the ability to purchase a gun?
There's two types of states. They're kind of shall issue states or kind of prove your worth kind of state. Montana is a shall issue state. And so the sheriff's office, and ultimately the sheriff, is the one that makes the decision on that. When I talked with him, he said, obviously a felony conviction, obviously anything that has to do with a domestic violence conviction, any type of crime, presence of any kind of a protection order, or also any kind of a judicial requirement from a judge or something like that. The other part, and so I asked them about misdemeanors. In the state of Washington, they have this catch-all that, or a crime of moral turpitude, whatever the heck that means. And so I asked him about that, and he said basically it's on a case-by-case basis, and if there's someone that comes in that has a misdemeanor conviction, usually the last process of them getting a concealed weapons permit is he brings them in and talks to them and finds out. He says, and you have run the gamut from 20 years ago stealing the pumpkin and getting charged with shoplift when they were a student at MSU from the front lot of Safeway to somebody that has no business having a concealed weapons permit. That's 15, 20 years ago. That's the only thing on his license he's going to get a concealed weapons permit. Now, when he filled out the form, if he failed to mention it on his form, then also that's a lack of truthfulness on the form itself. Sheriff Lutkin will deny each of those.
So Rich, you made no mention of history of alcohol abuse or mental health issues.
We don't have a reporting mechanism in the state of Montana for mental health issues.
So the two biggest problems aren't on the left.
I agree. Now, on the plus side, I guess, is that if you have a history of mental abuse or alcohol abuse, very, very often it will manifest itself in some sort of involvement in the criminal justice system. Sir?
Yes, in the state of Montana, incorporated cities and counties, what responsibility, if any, do you have in conducting background checks?
In incorporated cities, I have none. I have no... I have nothing to do with the concealed weapons permit.
Okay.
That's correct.
It's the county.
It is the county. It's by state law, it's mandated on the sheriff of each county.
And only for concealed weapons.
That's correct. And really, in the state of Montana, the concealed weapons permit doesn't do much for it, to be honest with you.
it allows you to carry concealed within the city limits of a city that doesn't authorize it in this full ordinance. And then that's about it. You can still carry concealed without a concealed weapons permit outside the confines of the city limits, which is very convenient, by the way. Yes, sir.
I was interested that you mentioned, you know, responsibility yeah. as an important issue in, in controlling gun violence. And you're in law enforcement, so my question is, do you have adequate law to do something about gun responsibility?
In certain areas, and in most areas, I think we do, yes. You know, and I think we do in the tragedy component of kids, too. Kids getting an unsecured weapon and stuff. You could do a child endangerment charge in all likelihood, I believe, down that. But you know what? You already reached tragedy there.
Yeah.
You know? You know, I think that there are quite a few laws on the books that get exercised, and there's quite a few that don't. A great example, and it's touted quite often in the statistics, is the one about background checks and untruthfulness on background checks and the number of thousands of those that there are versus the new prosecutions. I think that's a pretty good example of kind of laws that aren't exercised to the level that they could.
Is that because there isn't enough staff to...
I wouldn't begin to step into the U.S. Attorney's Office and say why that's broke. Yes, sir.
But what is the open carry law? Anybody
open
carry?
Yes, except in prohibited areas. There are certain, and there's certain municipalities that have identified public buildings, and Bozeman included. And yeah.
But, I mean, look, I saw a fellow in the restaurant the other day,
and
that's he's perfectly in his right.
He is. Yeah. Unless he's prohibited from possessing a firearm in some way. And those folks aren't known. And all, you know, it could be a perfect answer. It makes me very uneasy.
Me too.
I know. And I can understand why I was, you know, 8 times out of 10, I'm carrying 2. But, you know what? It's under a jacket or it's under a shirt or, yeah, it kind of makes me very uneasy. It seems like folks are pushing the envelope, But, yeah, they have every legal right to do that.
Well, it's interesting to me that to get a driver's license, you have to pass a test.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know all the laws related to it, and you have to be able to demonstrate that you actually know how to drive a car. But to get a gun license, you don't have to do that. Now, that's a kind of a law that it would seem to me is just common sense. To me, that's just common sense. I was struck also by what you said about you can't take a position.
No, I didn't say I can't take a position. I have chosen not
you
to take a position.
You choose not to take a position because you don't want to polarize. I understand that. Because you want to be seen as the trustworthy police chief by everybody on all sides of this issue. Mm-hmm. That's an important reason for not doing that. I sometimes, as a minister, do not take a position in my church for the very same reason. I don't want to be seen as on a side that puts me in opposition to other people in the congregation. But I was struck by the fact that our current mayor, Sean Becker, did decide that he would go and join Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing you're against illegal guns, too.
Yep. Illegal guns? Absolutely. Yeah. If they're a violation of law, absolutely.
Yeah. Do they have anything like police chiefs against illegal guns?
Yeah, there are chiefs that have become very outspoken, especially in some of the inner city kind of communities and that are, in my mind, are addressing a local significant issue. You know? And I'm not trying to minimize things. I'm not trying to say that it's not an issue in Bozeman. It is an issue in Bozeman. It's a different issue in Bozeman. It's not an assault weapon issue in Bozeman. It's not, frankly,
so
it's not
far,
people.
So far, it's not
absolutely.
Assault weapons.
Yeah, it's not a. It's not a. People that are unlawfully possessing and committing heinous crimes. It's folks that are committing heinous crimes that, at least historically, are lawfully possessing generally a hunting weapon. You know, and that's every place is different. Mm-hmm. And I think for me to stand up here and treat this community like it's and Paul Cincinnati is one of the very outspoken, Washington D.C. is one of the very outspoken, and does a service to the community.
Ron, what can you say about the mechanisms that exist to make guns not fired by people that don't own them?
The biotechnology.
Safety locks, or, I mean, there's got to be.
Well, safety locks, I mean, we give out safety locks. Every time we have a public function, we have this basket, and we try to give out safety locks. I mean, that's easy.
Are people receptive to using those?
Yeah, yeah. And we go through, you know, a ballpark, a couple hundred a year.
Yeah. But there are other things that could be.
There are biosensor individualized guns, and that's an entirely different subject. You know, this is another great example of people with power and money removing power and money from somebody else. There was a gun manufacturer that was going down the path of working solidly on those, and I think personally was probably strong-armed out of it through a powerful gun-based organization that goes by initials.
I kind of had the feeling that maybe there was violence in our culture, which is, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was wondering in the sociological aspects of, you know, violence as desensitization and media and what we're exposed to from an entertainment mm-hmm. perspective.
You know, all I do is be regurgitating the things I've read. And the things I've read is that there's a level of desensitization through
gaming,
just watching, that maybe doesn't play that big of an impact, but the one where you're an active participant in the gaming stuff seems to have, at least through the studies I've read, seems to have a significant impact or a greater impact. Mm-hmm. That, again, all I'm doing is regurgitating things that I've read. Yes, ma'am.
I'm wondering about our schools in Gallatin County, just because I live in Gallatin County. But what's happening in Gallatin County in junior high and high school in terms of education, teaching students about weapons? I mean, I don't know if ever guns get into our high school.
Yeah, I honestly don't have an answer for you.
Okay.
I know that we extended our presence in the Bozeman Public School System. We have until this year, we had two school resource officers, and both of them were assigned to the high school. And then we had a DARE officer that moved between all of the elementary schools, and then he hit one specific grade level in each one of the elementary schools. And this year, we made a conscious decision to remove DARE from the curriculum and added and replaced that one DARE officer with two school resource officers so that they can assign them to each of the middle schools and the four feeder elementary schools. So this officer is the chief, this one, you know, over here, and they have that responsibility. The thing that we also added to that is we wanted that presence and we wanted that face there and we wanted that level of security there. But the thing we also wanted is we wanted that an education curriculum component that was a little bit broader and wasn't tied as strongly to there so they could hit other areas. Now, they are not getting the gun area, to the best of my knowledge. That curriculum, this is happening as we speak, and that curriculum is going through curriculum development with the Bozeman School District right now.
So it's primarily around drugs and alcohol?
And bullying, and good citizenship, and making decisions that aren't driven by peers, and a lot of that sort of stuff. And one of the other things we found about here is that with the most recent changes of the DARE curriculum, it was mirroring the curriculum that was being taught by, they have a fancy name for it, I call it health, by those teachers in the school district. And so these kids were getting hit with it twice, and we were losing kids and interest and things like that.
I think this has been an absolutely fascinating discussion.
I live alone. I go to meetings like this or others that might be downtown or at the senior center or wherever, and I often walk alone in the evening. And people have asked me, do you feel safe? And I said, I haven't had any problem. I feel safe. Should I feel safe?
I think so.
Okay.
Since I've been here, I can only think of two. I can think of two stranger-related contacts on the street with women. And thank goodness, both of them were, you know, attempts, and who knows where it would have gone, but in the 3 years that I've been here, I think you should. And the bigger question is, do you?
I do.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Because, you know, all of these statistical things, this is, and this is kind of the million-dollar question. The cops always evaluate themselves, and they evaluate departments by this stuff. You know, the number of calls for service they have, 47,000 if you're keeping notes somewhere. That's how many calls for service we go on every year. The number of calls for service, what our response times are, what our ticket counts are, what our number of accidents we go to. That's how we evaluate ourselves. And that's a horrible way to evaluate yourself. All that doesn't say, well, how good a job we're doing. All it says is how hard we're working. You know? And those are two entirely different things. But the thing is that nobody's come up with this thing that this public value, how do you measure what you provide in the way of value to your public? And to me, one of the biggest ones isn't safety. It's the presence and sense of safety. And so that's why I was glad to hear you say that.
Our speakers
just
have some applause.
Scott Malloy, who is the director of the Gallatin Mental Health Clinic, and we will be discussing mental health and violence. And also Dennis Egg, who's the professor in the film and TV department, and he will be talking about the role of media in violence.